The Pat Kenny Show
with Timber Living Log Cabins.
Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.
Well, now I'm joined in the studio by Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times. We're going to go through the Sunday newspapers. We'll start with just the front pages, and then Jack will dig in a little deeper into the various stories. Avalanche of change, business leaders demand urgent AI action. That's the front of the Business Post, which has an interesting political poll as well. The Irish Mail on Sunday, Donaldson taught sex ed to children. And a question they ask is, Ronan Keating cozying up to Dubai regime? And there's a story about Joe Duffy. We'll come to that in a moment. A demand from Joe about mobile phones and suspected ne'er-do-wells. The Sunday Times, next kin and kingpin spotted playing paddle. That's that racket game which is becoming more and more popular. And the Minister for Justice has caved into solicitors' fee demand. Of course, the front of the Sunday Independent, miscarriage leave to be introduced in coalition plan. So, Jack, let's start with that poll in the Sunday Business Post. And the headlines, not good news for Fianna Fáil, down to 14%.
Yeah, remarkably low. And I think this is a poll result that is going to give perhaps fresh momentum, or certainly something to chew on for those internal enemies that Micheál Martin has within his parliamentary party, which kind of raised its head already during the week in this renewed debate within Fianna Fáil over the direction of travel around the triple lock. You see also in the Sunday Times, they have a list now of 17 people who have signed this letter querying the policy, the move to dismantle the triple lock, really. So that's a really low number for Fianna Fáil. It's well adrift of Fine Gael. It's even further adrift of Sinn Féin. Micheál Martin presumably will counter and say, look, you know, we're a million miles away from a general election, and let's not hare after the Brits in terms of defenestrating leaders of government just because they have a bad opinion poll here and there. But look, this will be bad news.
Looking at the other numbers, let's look at the parties in the doldrums. In other words, nothing happening. Labour at 4%, no change. People Before Profit, Solidarity, 4%, no change. The Greens at 3%, no change. Independent Ireland down 2% to 5%. AINTHU down 1% to 6%. Independence up 1% to 12%. And I suppose the big winners are seen as the Soc Dems, plus 2% to 12%, just 2 points adrift of Fianna Fáil. Fine Gael up 1% to 18%. And the leaders still in every poll consistently at 21%, Sinn Féin.
Yes. A couple of things to pull out there from where we see changes. And it is worth remarking just briefly that all these changes are within the margin of error. So we're not looking at a massive kind of jump in any direction. But look, the trend is always worth analysing. AINTHU and Independent Ireland, we saw them both growing, I think, across nearly every poll across all the different newspapers in the wake of the fuel protests, and particularly Independent Ireland were seen as capitalising there. Perhaps that seems to be something of a fleeting thing with them retreating back to where they were. But the story here, when it comes to trends, I think, is the Social Democrats and the growth that they've seen since the general election in 2024.
Now, Labour must be scratching their heads. They're saying, like, there's not a whisker, really, between the policies of the Labour Party and the Social Democrats. In general terms, there will be specifics where they differ.
Sure.
And they'll be saying, what are we doing wrong?
And they look
at the Holly factor?
They look at their political cousins in the Social Democrats and three times their level of support. Look, I think this is, it's a brand thing. It's a political brand thing. And it's an age thing to a certain extent as well. I think when you look at the age support, or the support among different age cohorts for Labour, their support looks a little bit like Fianna Fáil's in some way, in that it's kind of, it's more heavily weighted towards the older deciles. But there is a momentum, like in American politics, they call it Big Mo, this ineffable thing where an energy attaches itself to a particular party or a leader around at a particular time. We've seen this in Irish politics before. We saw it in 2020 around Mary Lou McDonald and Sinn Féin as they surged from, I think they were on about 12 points actually, and ended up being de facto winners of that general election 2020, just because there was a surge in momentum. We saw it around Catherine Connolly last year. You know, when someone catches the falling knife of political momentum, it's hard to really swim against that tide.
And it seems to be catching itself. Seize your moment when you have it.
You seize your moment. I mean, the issue is, of course, for the Social Democrats that, as I said already, we're a million miles away from an actual electoral event. We had our two by-elections, and that's kind of it if this government goes the distance or close to the distance. So much again like Sinn Féin in the last cycle, the difficulty will be not just generating this polling support. It'll be convincing people, it'll be retaining it and convincing people as you head towards general election that, look, we're not just a kind of modish political operation where people are happy to lend their support in opinion polls. We're a party that is kind of serious about government and can do the difficult work of government credibly, which is where Micheál Martin, conversely, has done very well.
The last time we had the presidency, we added quite a few countries to the EU numbers. Doesn't look like that's going to happen this time round. There won't be time for the countries queuing up to actually get in before we leave our presidency.
Yeah.
But there are a few things. If you look at the question, should the EU expand membership if it requires Ireland to contribute more to the EU budget? And we are a net contributor now for many years. We used to be a net recipient. And it's 29% say yes, expand, even if it costs us more. 45% say no.
It's really dwarfed, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
You wouldn't quite say that this is evidence of a kind of
anti-EU. Isn't
this
the trapdoor, closing the trapdoor after I've reached the summit?
Maybe to an extent, or at least if it looks like I'm going to have to dip my hand in my own pocket to pay for it all. Look, this is not like a kind of anti-EU sentiment, I think, creeping into Irish politics in any meaningful way, but it's the little kernel of something. It's a little bit more sceptical, less starry-eyed about the EU project. And I think that it's interesting as well, and we should say that this is all drawn from polling data that the Business Post have as well. And they have some other good stuff around the EU presidency and in the latter pages as well.
They want more, the people generally want more stricter regulation of big tech.
They want stricter regulation of big tech, but if you look at that question around would you favour expansion of the EU if you had to pay more for it, independent voters more staunchly opposed. 62% of them say no. That's a nearly two-thirds majority, and also I think those amongst lower income deciles as well. So again, is there this cohort, is there this segment of the Irish electorate, in some moods it's urban, or in some moods it's rural, lower income, independent leaning, you know, not represented, feeling not represented by mainstream politics, and is that kind of scepticism of the EU project or the current direction of travel within the EU, will that find a proving ground amongst
now,
those?
Now, when
those
people
voters
are polled, and I'm not sure of the methodology of the Red Sea polling, but it's not that they're given, like, 3 hours in the Leaving Cert to contemplate their answers. So this question, should there be a hard border with Northern Ireland as a way to strengthen migration controls? 41%, that is a majority over the 36%, 41% say
they would oppose
a hard border, 36% would support a hard border. You know, you're getting close there, 23% don't have a view. But the problem of trying to establish a hard border, it's very difficult.
I mean, the thing that just struck me about this is that for the guts of a decade since the Brexit referendum, you know, the first half and more of that was taken up with this obsession amongst the Irish policymaking and political elite of avoiding a hard border. It became a shibboleth, and it was something that we galvanised the entire of Europe behind us in support. And now it seems that when you take what is a current red button issue, migration, people are perhaps not as firmly attached to the idea of the hard border.
Again, I remember we're talking about that hard border and how impossible it might have been, even if it was desired, you know, with hundreds of crossings. So,
and none of that has gone away.
None of that's gone
just
away.
Because of an opinion poll.
What's going to happen? If you want a hard border, what do you do? I think what people are hoping for is that in some way the unionists in Northern Ireland will accept a passport control at the ports in Northern Ireland, which they will not.
Yeah, and I think that's a position that is generally summed up as a hard border in the Irish Sea or something like that. I mean, look, we know one thing from those recent and painful years talking about the border arrangements on this island and phytosanitary standards and all the rest of it. Nothing in this space is easy. It's easy to say this in response to an opinion poll. And look, it doesn't tell us nothing. It tells us something about how people feel about migration and how they compare and rank issues around things like the border, Irish unity, East-West relations, and the importance of migration. But like, this is not an easy and simple policy prescription, you know?
Yeah. Now, we did a Michael O'Leary on the programme yesterday, and he was talking about GDPR, and, you know, they are willing to take photocopies of every document presented to them to get on a Ryanair plane and pass it on to the authorities here. And that would eliminate, were it possible to do this under GDPR, which he waxed strongly against, it would mean that the document you got on the Ryanair plane, they would have a copy of it. So when people get off a plane saying, I've no documentation, they know what they got on the plane with.
Yeah, exactly. And this is something that we've seen kind of around the migration debate an awful lot. And people kind of advocating for refugees and migrants would say, look, often these people are placed under duress. They may be a person traveller, a people smuggler, on the plane with them. You know, you don't know the exact circumstances. But look, it's one of those areas that is going to be subject to repeat scrutiny.
Now, other stories. The front of the Irish Mail on Sunday, Donaldson taught sex ed to children. And that story features in other papers as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of coverage, as you might expect, of the aftermath of the conviction of Geoffrey Donaldson, the former leader of the DUP. And that story, as you say, his previous involvement within his own church, the Kilkeel, and his, you know, giving sex education classes to teenagers and telling teenagers to repress the urge by placing a Bible between them, all of which serves to draw out, I think, and there's plenty of good coverage in this, particularly across page 8 of the Sindo. Yeah. There's three different pieces, and I draw people's attention to Sam McBride's piece in particular, talking about how the case kind of exposes this alternative justice system that almost seems to exist within the evangelical church in Northern Ireland. And he delves into, you know, the various different kind of forays into reconciliation between Donaldson and his victims, which yeah. Donaldson was kind of, he was not really engaging in good faith. He was using it, as I think Brenda Parr says in her back page column in the same paper in the Sindo, he was wearing faith as a cloak to hide his sins. He was manipulating almost this system that exists within the evangelical
the
church.
Alternative justice system.
Exactly. And look, we have plenty of history in this country, not and on this island, you know, not just within the evangelical church, but within the Catholic church.
And then there's a quotation from Donaldson that he once demanded zero tolerance for sex offenders.
Zero tolerance for sex offenders. And I mean, the deep and rank hypocrisies of the private life of this guy versus his public positions. And there was a lot of this in the BBC NI programme, I think, that went out on Friday night. You know,
who knew what and why?
Who knew what and when? Yeah,
why the whistle wasn't blown.
You know, he was visiting, apparently, gay saunas in London, observed by secret policemen who were, I think, part of his protection detail, you know, preaching abstinence, vomiting from an excess of alcohol all over the mayor of Beijing, all this kind of stuff, which now I think the DUP needs to have a reckoning with, and they've said that they're going to have an internal investigation. But it's a big moment for that party.
Now, the story that just won't go away, when is the Children's Hospital going to open?
Take your pick. It's remarkable. There's more stories. There's a couple of yarns on this in the Sunday Independent and the Sunday Times. The Sunday Independent reporting that the Children's Hospital won't be ready until October, while the Sunday Times on page 2 there is detailing a row over snags with the Children's Hospital builder. And, you know, the numbers here tell their own story. I think there's something like 4,000 snags, you know, hundreds of rooms still not handed over. And the old reliable of this story, the slipping timelines, like sand through the fingers of the Minister for Health, you know, unable, and nobody really able to say exactly when this is going to be passed over. October now seems to be the best bet, best expectation. Anyway.
I mentioned Joe Duffy in passing there, and he is featured in a number of the newspapers. This is apropos of an event celebrating the life and the premature death of Veronica Guerin. And he wants the police to be able to seize mobile phones on a hunch.
Yeah, in front of a star-studded list of attendees, including Jim O'Callaghan, the Justice Minister, Helen McEntee, the Foreign Affairs Minister, the Garda Commissioner, Justin Kelly, and the AG, Rossa Fanning. So people who would have a view on something like this. I mean, it's a remarkable intervention. Like the suggestion that Joe Duffy is making is that, you know, basically, if a guard strolls past a suspected gangland criminal on the street or some equivalent scenario, should be able just to seize the criminal's phone and inventory and harvest the data that's in it. Mm. And look, you can kind of see the appeal of it. Maybe it might.
Do you remember the old row over in London, in Britain generally, but in London in particular, about the sus law? You know, if you suspect someone,
yeah,
you can nab them, and that just doesn't.
Well, I mean, we do have a kind of big body of civil libertarian knowledge and law around this to kind of prevent arbitrary seizure of people or property by the security forces of the state. So look, while there may be a kind of basic level appeal to the idea that you might be able to just interdict a baton and take their phone and do some good by doing that. Like, I think the architecture of good things that such an approach would weaken would be.
There are a few stories around the planning area and the housing in the Mail on Sunday. They talk about an IT failure on Commission Planol. It's all about Ahenish. It's well worth reading it. We won't go into it now.
It's remarkable. It is remarkable.
Yeah, it is a remarkable story, but the detail of it would take a lot more time. Irish rental market on the verge of collapse, says the Sunday Independent, and a call for a database showing bids for homes in an attempt to stop gazumping.
Yeah, so this is a call from Conor Sheehan, the Limerick City TD and Labour spokesman on housing. He's basically saying, look, we need to increase the level of transparency around buying a house. And I think that there are many people, anyone who's been involved in buying a house, I think would agree with that. Like, it is this incredible grey market for the most expensive thing you're ever going to buy.
We've always said on my programmes that, you know, there's three ways to flog a house. One, you can do it by a private sale, you can do it by auction, or you can do it by tender. Now, if it's for sale at 400,000 and I come to you with 400,000, I should get the house.
And I think that is the case in other jurisdictions as well. If you hit the
and if you want to do the Dutch auction, do it by tender.
Yeah.
And if you want to take your chances on a good day, do it by public auction.
It's the ultimate example of you wouldn't start from here. The Irish system for buying houses just seems to be so wasted.
The final story we look at is about leave for miscarriage.
Yeah, so this is on the front page of the Sunday Independent. These are plans that are being worked on by the Minister for Enterprise, Peter Burke, who is hoping to bring them to Cabinet in the not-too-distant future. I think it's 5 days, bear with me here while I pull it up, I think it's 5 days, he suggests, of paid leave for those who
miscarry or indeed have an abortion
Before 23 weeks of pregnancy. And interestingly, it would apply to those who have a termination before 12 weeks and in some limited circumstances after 12 weeks. So look, this is obviously a policy direction that the government is interested in. It is worth bearing in mind this at an early enough stage. I don't think the Attorney General has even seen sight of it. But it's in keeping with a stance that goes back into the last coalition as well. You know, general kind of improvement of T's and C's for workers. It'd be interesting to see, I suppose, what the employers' bodies think when they get to have a look at this. But it's all there on the front page of the Sunday Independent.
Very good. Lots to read in the Sunday papers today. Yeah. Jack Horgan-Jones, political correspondent with the Irish Times. Thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Timber Living Log Cabins.